Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of June 3rd, 2015. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Great. So, D.R., I was listening earlier today to your interview on another podcast called the Bradcast, huh? You sounded great.
Thank you so very much. Brad Friedman is such a great host. And it was a pleasure to speak to him.
Well, that's good. That's good. Good for you. DR, you're all over the place, and I love you for it.
Thanks.
So I got this bee in my bonnet this week, DR, about a concept of that I think climate hawks would benefit from thinking about. It's a way of categorizing the kind of events and the news that we talk about. On this show, we try and provide perspective about how to think about all the news that comes at us. Mm-hmm. And the concepts are pretty simple. It's that in the climate movement, or what we're doing, there are two categories of efforts. One is to address what I would call the demand side, and one is to address what I would call the supply side. Now, mm-hmm. The supply side, demand side goes back to Ronald Reagan, of course, and I guess you were talking about Ronnie Reagan earlier today on the broadcast. But mm-hmm. supply side and demand side, in the context of climate change stuff, let me just talk it through for a minute. On the demand side of the ledger, we have efforts to reduce the demand for fossil fuel, to reduce carbon emissions. Right, mm-hmm. That's been the classic thing that climate hawks have worried about, is having less emission. And of course, that goes to things like, you know, are you insulating your home? Right? Did you buy a Prius? Are you using less fuel? Okay. Mm-hmm. The COP21 negotiations that we've talked about endlessly that are going to happen in Paris this December are almost entirely focused on the reduction of emissions. So mm-hmm. that is to say, to somehow reduce the demand for fossil fuels and reduce the emissions in the process. We have the president's clean energy plan is going to change the coal plant structure and basically reduce the demand for carbon fuel that way. Mm-hmm. The flip side is that you have this idea of a supply of fossil fuels. So now mm-hmm. we've on the supply side, you've got the Keystone XL pipeline, which wants to pump out more fossil fuels. You have Royal Dutch Shell that wants to go into the Arctic and find more fossil fuels. The president recently approved a lease to go into the Powder River Basin somewhere out west and extract mm-hmm. billions of tons of coal. Right? This mm-hmm. is all a supply of fossil fuels. And, of course, the climate movement has addressed that supply by talking about divestment. Bill McKibben did the Do the Math article, which is sort of the initial article in this whole thing. The Guardian is doing a Keep It in the Ground campaign that people... Mm-hmm. But all of those things are addressed at the supply. So I think for climate hawks, it's an interesting way to look at an issue and say, is this a demand-side issue or a supply-side issue? And a bigger question will be, what's the most important of the two? I mean, where do we put our energies as climate hawks? So does that make any sense at all, DR? Tell me, what do you think?
It's a fascinating question, and it's one that David Roberts touched upon in a piece on May the 29th about the Powder River decision that President Obama and Interior Secretary Sally Jewell made in terms of basically clearing a path for all this coal to be developed and exploited. And David Roberts noted that this controversy involving the coal leasing is is a part of an ongoing conflict between Obama and environmentalists that goes all the way back to 2008. Arguments over Obama's environmental climate and climate legacy always come down to this. He's willing to support policies that reduce demand for fossil fuel energy. He's willing to support policies that boost supply of clean energy, but he is not willing to constrict the supply of fossil fuel energy. And David Roberts goes on to cite a Bill McKibben op-ed that was written last month, dealing with Obama's clearing a path to Shell to drill in the Arctic, in which McKibben noted that Obama seems unwilling to try to cut off the supply of dirty energy. Mm-hmm. And in response to McKibben's op-ed and David Roberts' piece, it's my sense that it is the duty of climate activists specifically, but more broadly and more importantly, Americans generally, at least in the United States, and obviously climate activists in other countries, but for purposes of this discussion, let's focus on the United States. It is incumbent upon Americans generally to demand that the dirty energy be kept in the ground, unexploited and undeveloped, that now that there is so much awareness of the risks of exploiting all the dirty energy, now that there is an understanding that if you burn all that carbon, if you burn all those carbon reserves, basically the planet goes up in flames and down in flood, that requires the American people in strong supermajority numbers to demand of President Obama and other elected officials to make sure that the dirty stuff stays in the ground for good.
But I mean, of course, I agree with you, but I think that it is an interesting development over the last 3 or 4 years that climate activists have become much more focused on the demand side. I mean, again, mm-hmm. Bill McKibben, you know, bless his name, was the one who identified KXL. That was the first instance where he said, no, this stuff must stay in the ground. Mm-hmm. And it has since blossomed into the divestment movement and all kinds of stuff. But that's a new idea in climate circles. But mm-hmm. let me just go back to the Dave Roberts article, which was on this Vox.com website. We'll put up the link to it. He, not acting as an apologist for Obama, but at least he put up the argument that is made that justifies what Obama's doing. That is to say, mm-hmm. there is so much, and I guess it hinges on what Bill McKibben has already said, is that the amount of proven reserves, the amount of fossil fuel that's available is so far ahead of what we can reasonably burn, right, mm-hmm. that trying to restrict individual projects is a fool's game. Because mm-hmm. there's someone else will go somewhere, they'll find methane clathrates off Bermuda, and they'll find fossil fuel everywhere, and that it's a waste of energy to try and stop them from extracting, right? Mm-hmm. And that you should focus your energies on reducing the demand for that product, which will then have that market collapse. Mm. Now, whether or not you agree with that is a different story, but I mean, at least, I mean, I guess having read it, I was struck by, I mean, maybe you can make you have an arguable position that I shouldn't even worry about Royal Dutch Shell. I shouldn't worry about mm-hmm. KXL because I really need to stop the demand side. I need to stop people using the fuel, and that's the way to go. That's an easier sell. Does that mm-hmm. make any sense?
Sure. And Roberts noted that that you know this issue of exploitation of dirty energy is, quote, true instantly of most leaders of industrialized nations. It's difficult to find an example of a government putting domestic fossil fuel deposits off limits on the basis of climate concern, unquote. And that goes to, again, going back to the push that Bill McKibben and 350.org are leading with regard to issues such as divestment mm-hmm. and the broader issue of trying to make sure that the fossil fuel industry loses the political power it has to essentially compel the exploitation of dirty energy, that essentially, in order to keep things in the ground, you must block the muscle that tries to force this dirty energy out of the ground, and that therefore this is why you need a worldwide citizen push and a worldwide level of activism to basically say, hey, our voice is louder than the voices of the dirty energy barons, and that therefore you must leave this undeveloped for the sake of future generations.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that the the effort to keep the fossil fuel in the ground, I mean, it is the morally correct thing to do, right? And it does provide the two-front war, right? As to say, I would say it seems that we need to focus on both efficiency and reduction in demand, but at the same time, reduce the supply. Because my feeling is that if we find a supply of fuel, it will be extracted, right? Mm-hmm. Someone's going to dig it out. Once there's a tank of oil there, you know, everyone's like Mad Max, right? They're going to use mm-hmm. that oil or that gasoline, right? So if you mm-hmm. don't have it around, then you're forced to other energy sources. And I mm-hmm. think that's part of the argument for the sort of keep it in the ground movement. Although, mm-hmm. I mean, it's really, I mean, while I agree with you that a two-front approach is the right way to go, I think that people need to think about it because there's only so much psychic energy in the world for the climate hawks. And the question mm-hmm. is, which side do we focus on, right? If you had to pick one, would you go after ExxonMobil and try and stop the oil industry? Or would you mm-hmm. try and have a mass conversion of humanity to using less energy?
You do wonder if it's possible to do 50% of one, 50% of the other. Do you devote your energies to an equal side? I want to bounce back for a second. You brought up the interview on the broadcast with Brad Friedman, and we were talking a bit about the various controversies surrounding Rush Limbaugh, and it reminded me of something that Limbaugh said on his radio show 10 years ago, in which he said that the fossil fuel industry would not voluntarily go to renewable energy unless there was explicit evidence that oil reserves were running out. That once there was concrete evidence that worldwide oil reserves were running out, then you would see the fossil fuel industry rush headlong into renewables and rush headlong into clean energy. And going back to those remarks from 10 years ago, it sort of goes back to this point that it is incumbent upon people to demand that the fossil fuel industry behave as though those supplies are running out. And you can do that by pushing for both a non-exploitation of the supply and also for pushing for policies that reduce demand, whether it's carbon pricing, whether it's cap and trade, whether it's more energy efficiency, that the common denominator is that there has to be a complete push towards making it economically and morally unwise to exploit dirty energy.
Well, I guess, to your point, that all these magic reserves that the oil industry is searching for become less valuable when the price of fossil fuels is raised too high by, say, a carbon tax, right? Mm-hmm. So if there was a stiff carbon tax, all of a sudden your reserves would be decreased because you couldn't extract them economically. And that's the real deciding line, isn't it?
They effectively become stranded assets, and it's interesting to note this in light of the recent reports about BP, Shell, and four other major oil companies basically writing a letter saying that they would like to have some form of international carbon pricing coming out of the Paris COP21 talks in December, and the speculation is that the actual goal of this is to essentially sideline the coal industry to make the worldwide coal industry a stranded asset and thus protect, at least for the time being, natural gas because of the idea that the natural gas industry would benefit from carbon pricing because of the reduced carbon intensity of natural gas relative to oil and coal. But again, you know, that the controversy stemming from this announcement by BP and Shell, I think that's only going to empower the divestment movement more, because once people figure out that BP and Shell are doing this in part or in whole as a means of protecting the fracked gas industry, people are going to say, hey, you know, the fracked gas has to remain unexploited, and thus we need to have more of a push for divestment, more of a push to against pipelines, more of a push to keep it in the ground so that the entirety of the fossil fuel industry finally gets to a point where it says we will move towards renewables simply to avoid the political and cultural and moral shame of continuing to stick with a business as usual model.
Well, there you have it, folks. I think that I think the idea of supply side issues and demand side issues are an interesting lens through which to view the news and which to put things into categories. And it raises interesting questions of which I don't think either you, DR, nor I have clear answers. But once you get a question, at least you're on the path to an answer. And so I hope that it's an interesting concept for climate hawks who may be listening to the show. Let us know what you think out there, right? So let me tell everybody that let me find my little script. Everyone can check out the links to most of what we've discussed here at the blog. It's a WordPress blog, massclimateaction.wordpress.com. Leave us a comment. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. And you can listen to the show by clicking through the icon there. Please share our show so other people can find us. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, or you can go to iTunes and search for Massachusetts Climate Action under the podcast heading. We're right there. We don't have much competition. Please subscribe. It improves our visibility and lets other people find out about our show. So, we will close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. Thank you, DR, for being here.
Thanks.
It's great to have you. Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll see you all next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool. All right, I better save that.